You're with Stateside. I'm April Baer. It may be that by this point in the day, you're more than ready to turn off your phone. It's so hard to look away when breaking news is happening. But maybe we can all agree we should feel free to make less frequent use of technology. Maybe you even have daydreams about joining an Amish community somewhere and just switching off. Would it surprise you to know even the Amish use some tech? Michigander Jeff Smith is the author of Becoming Amish, A Family's Search for Faith, Community, and Purpose. And he recently wrote an essay about this in the Washington Post. Jeff Smith, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I think a lot of people might be surprised to hear that the Amish do use some tech. How did you become aware of how this works?
Well, let's see. A guy that I grew up with, I met him when I was 4 years old in Livonia, and we were best friends throughout life, and I was best man in his wedding, and he was best man in my wedding. And but then about in our mid-30s, he and his wife kind of headed off on a journey of faith and ended up becoming Amish. And so at the time, I ended up being editor of Traverse Magazine. I wrote a story about them. And as I kind of learned more about their life and the choices that they make and their community makes, that eventually evolved into a book about their journey. So
tell us about some of the ways that Amish families sometimes make the decision to embrace technology. Could you give us some examples and sort of tell us how they make their decisions?
So I think one of the most unexpected things about the Amish, at least for me, but also when people talk to me about my book and I present, is that there's actually quite a diversity of technology rules within the broad Amish community. And for example, you might have communities where the members are not even allowed to put a rubber tire around their steel wheel on their buggy, for example. And that would be, you know, on the really more low-tech scale. But on the other end of the scale, you might have communities that allow their members to drive diesel-powered tractors and then maybe even take that a step further, and they might be allowed to drive that tractor to church with their family, you know, in the back.
When we say allowed, maybe it's a good time that we unpack sort of how these decisions are made. I mean, what is the hierarchy within Amish communities?
The Amish communities are made up of about 30 families, and each of those church groups gets to decide the rules of their technology acceptance. And, you know, largely they would adhere to kind of a broad Amish philosophy, but as, you know, as I've just indicated, there is some real latitude within that. And so when they are presented with choices about technology, their huge determinants are, how will this affect our family? How will this affect our relationships with our brothers and sisters in our community, and of course, how do we feel this, you know, interacts with our faith? And so they would have a conversation about that. They would vote on it. It's not like a decree from on high, really. It's a very communal kind of structure. And of course, that's going to vary among communities based on the personalities involved and the strength of, you know, the bishop or whatever. But that's how it's, you know, supposed to work, basically. One example I mentioned in the Washington Post essay, I think, is one of my favorites, where a guy in my friend's community wanted to buy a hay baler that allowed him to bale hay alone. So he would no longer need his friends to come and help him bale hay. And I think he might have had kind of a health issue or something that was driving this. But anyway, so they talked about this as a community, like, how will that affect our community and our ties with one another if this guy is over here just baling hay all by himself? And it's no longer, hey, we're all here with you and we're helping you and we're helping one another. And so they really talked this all through, and it's kind of a big thing. And so what they decided, and again, I think it was in part because of this health issue, is he was allowed to go ahead and get this baler, but nobody else used it. And so they all kept, you know, gathering and doing this work. Another example that I liked was in a family wanted to run propane gas lines to all the rooms of their home so they could have lights in the bedrooms, say. And so as opposed to just having propane in the main gathering areas like the kitchen, dining room, living room. And so the conversation there was, well, if we allow this, then everyone's going to go to their bedrooms and read alone versus gathering in the living room to read together. And I think, you know, as we hear these kind of stories, you know, it makes sense intellectually, but I think even more important, we kind of feel it in our heart, right? Like when you think, oh, I'm gathering in my living room with my kids and we're all reading together, like you feel that in your heart. And I think that really says something about our human condition and how this stuff is really legit to think about and be super intentional about.
Well, it feels like a situation that could have happened in almost literally any American family, the only difference being that the Amish actually talk about it as it's happening.
Yes, right. They're very intentional instead of just allowing it to happen. You're absolutely right. And that is, and honestly, that's the whole point of the essay. Let's be intentional about this. Let's not just sort of allow tech to creep in and do its thing. And all of a sudden we're standing there going, wow, what happened? You know, my family is no longer looking at each other, all looking at their phone at dinner time, you know, and stuff like that. So intentionality is kind of the big message. Yeah.
Even with all this thought and intention, I mean, Amish families are not, you know, they're still just American families.
Absolutely.
Are there ways that they sometimes get drawn in as all the rest of us do in ways that decrease connection or that they maybe came to regret later?
You know, I would say I'm sure there are. There just have to be. And we've probably all seen maybe pictures on the internet or something where Amish girls are looking at their phones or something like that, you know. And so I have no doubt that they do. But I think, you know, speaking broadly about them, the incidence of that is probably less. And but yes, they. I'm really glad you brought that up, though. They're humans. They struggle with all the same things, and I'm sure they get pulled into it as we do.
I was very interested to read that there are other factors than technology that pose challenges to the Amish as they try to stay true to who they are, even as their numbers are increasing. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is simply trying to make a living. And that all gets back to technology as well. And while they are very supportive of one another in their businesses and in their farming and all that, they still have to deal with the fact that it takes them way longer to harvest corn than just, you know, going through the huge combine or whatever. And that's just a very real thing when it comes to price and labor and all that. So there has been a steady migration off the farm. And so that migration to new things like manufacturing and retail and all these other things, you know, they have to interact with the world a lot more, and that presents a challenge. It is a fundamental principle of Amish to remain separate. Like, that's not just sort of an accidental thing or we kind of like it this way thing. That is a very central tenet of their belief that we shall remain separate from the broader world. And so as they migrate into that world to have to make a living, basically, you know, that does present challenges for them. But I think it's really interesting that despite that increased interaction with a bigger world, the percentage of people who stay Amish, who have been raised Amish, remains relatively stable and is actually quite high. Like, it is around 90%.
Even as technology makes further and further inroads into society, you're saying that they've been able to hold their own.
Yeah, which is very surprising, really, I think anyway, yeah.
Is there anything that you've embraced in your life after seeing how they employ this more considered approach to technology and the ways that life is changing?
Well, I think where it's mostly affected me is, one, just being aware of that, you know, being aware of the influence of technology. Well, okay, like, here's maybe a silly example, but we got a a Nest controller for our heat, you know, in our home recently, and you can control that with your phone, okay? So you no longer have to stand up and walk across the room and change the temperature control, you know? And
on the thermostat.
On the thermostat, right. So I'm like, do I want to do that? Or am I okay still having to expend that energy and stand up and go over there? You know, it's like, is this an erosion of my physicality or something, you know? But I mean, that's just a simple, silly little example. I think, honestly, for me, the bigger thing is more being intentional about my interactions with people. And I think that's a big point of the essay, is the solutions, they don't have to come from like the government or Facebook. We don't need to wait for them to change how they're separating us and all that. We are empowered to sort of blunt this technology attack, if you want to call it that, by simply gathering more and being aware of how often we get together with friends and how often we visit, say, elders in our family or, you know, have a potluck or whatever. And so that, my reaction has been a little more like that, like not so much to reject a bunch of technology, but just be sort of always aware of how it's affecting me. So this isn't just like a small, cute, quaint thing. This is like it's truly affecting the very fabric of our social networks, and it's affecting our health. And I guess the point of that essay is, as we grapple with all that, we have the antidote. It's just an ancient thing. The antidote is ancient. It is just gathering with people we love or, you know, our neighbors, and just making sure we interact in those ways. And it's actually extremely powerful, and it has sustained us through our entire history. And so I think that's the main takeaway.
Jeff Smith is the author of Becoming Amish, A Family Safe for Faith, Community, and Purpose. You can find a link to his recent essay from The Washington Post at our website.